It's time for the Mac Geek Gab, and listener Andrew brings us our quick tip of the week with this little nugget. By accident, I pasted some italic text into Apple Messages the other day and sent it. Bold works just as well. It's just using the Command I or Command plus B to highlight that text and italicize it, bolden it. I think you could probably underline it too. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab number 1065 for Monday, November 25th, 2024.
To Mac Geek Gab, the show where we take tips like that from you, from us. We share them. We share cool stuff found. We share your questions. We try to answer your questions, or at least give some idea of where the troubleshooting process might lead us so that we can each be assured of learning at least five new things every single time we get together. Sponsors for this episode include Incogni.com/MacGeek. That's where you can use code MacGeek to get 60% off one of their annual plans. Otherworld Computing. This Black Friday, OWC brings us Mac users, us Apple users, unbeatable savings of up to 85% at MacSales.com. And 1Password.com/MGG is where you can go to get set up with 1Password extended access management, which solves the problems of traditional IAM and MDM cannot touch. So we'll talk more about those in a minute here on November 25th, Shopping Reminder Day. I'm Dave Hamilton in Durham, New Hampshire.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And greetings from the West Coast out in the Oakland Bay area this morning is Pilot Pete. Glad to be here, guys. I wasn't going to be, and now I am.
You were going to be. You weren't going to be. You weren't supposed to be in the United States today, or did I have that wrong, too?
No, we got here early. Okay. We've been revised a couple times and all that. Okay. So at 1065 code, armed robbery in progress. So if you're shopping today, just be on the lookout.
When I looked up 1065, it said, Your source for these is better than mine. I'm just going to say.
Okay.
Because the one I looked up at policecodes.net said net message assignment. And I was like, that's boring. I mean, certainly as computer nerds, we can take that and spin it into something interesting, but I like yours better, kind of.
Next week is a little more grim.
Is it? Okay. Well, I have yet.
Tune in next week and find out.
I have yet to prepare next week's show, so I don't know.
Oh, goodness. Hey, am I first up on the tips, too? Oh, you know what? Actually, I wanted to follow up on the quick tip that we got because it talked about italicizing messages and bolding messages, that sort of thing. Also, if you type something out and then go back and select it in iOS, if you look at the top, there's a little A with three little lines next to it, and that allows you to do all kinds of other funky stuff with messages, to include having it, you know, a pulse and enlarge in and dance around a little bit and circle, and it does all kinds of really cool stuff. And I think I saw somewhere in there yesterday when I was playing with it that you can also get it to insert passwords.
Oh, nice.
So it's play with the message window in iOS and you'll find some cool stuff in there.
And Pete, there's a third voice here today.
Yeah, I think I was supposed to be up first, and I'm
sorry.
Dropped the ball. No. Well, that was my fault.
I followed up on the opening.
I'm glad
that's
you jumped in to fill the dead air that I left. But yeah, speaking of air, Tony has a tip. He says, loving the show and all I learned since 2007. Well, thanks, Tony, for being around. Maybe earlier even, he thinks. He says, this is kind of stupid, but maybe it'll help someone. I switched between the Logitech MX Master Mouse and the Apple Magic Mouse. I noticed that when using the Magic Mouse, more and more clicks were unrecognized. The Logitech mouse was fine, so not software. And I thought, well, maybe time for a new mouse, right? Well, looking at the thing, figured there wasn't much electromechanical going on, but thought What the heck? Like it was my birthday, I blew hard into the slit between the top and bottom parts at the front of the mouse. And yes, clicks are all registering now. Maybe compressed air is a wiser option, though. And why not go around the sides as well? So blowing out the mouse like an old Atari cartridge. I guess we did that with our Nintendo cartridges too, but we, like old game console cartridges, you'd have to like, you know, blow in those things to get them working again.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Fun stuff. That's Adam Christensen there, folks. Thank you for doing that. Yeah. I don't think we've said your name yet this episode. So.
Yeah. Oh, we did. Yeah. At the beginning.
He introduced himself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I missed that then. I thought we just stepped right over it. All right. Sorry.
I'm in South Dakota. Yeah.
I remember this now. Yes. Yeah. Now I remember. Yeah. Here we are. Okay.
Welcome back, Dave.
Thanks. I'm happy to be
glad
here.
Glad you could join us.
Yeah, dude. I haven't been sleeping well the last couple nights. I don't know why, but I get to sleep fine. And then I wake up super early and my mind's like, time to do stuff. And it's like, okay, here we are. So. Yeah,
welcome to my world.
Yeah, right, yeah, right.
It's Thursday. We're like,
right.
Everything's a little bit off.
We are recording this a little bit early so that we can squeeze in two before the holiday and all that stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, it's all good.
It's the fourth Monday this week.
Sure feels like it. Yeah. All right. I have one from Dr. Lee.
Doctor in the house.
Doctor in the house. That's right. I was listening to
aside from us, Dave.
Aside from us, well, I'm only a doctor when I'm in Mexico. That's the only place they'll let me write prescriptions. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's true.
It's a long story, folks. Go it back is. Many years.
Yeah, I'll find the episode. I'll link you to it. Sure. I was listening, Dr. Lee continues, to an audiobook on my AirPods Pro Gen 2 while also logging into my bank account on my Mac. A pop-up message appeared asking me to enter the ping ID code sent to your phone. Just as I took a big swig of Diet Coke while waiting for the code, Stereo Siri says, ping ID sent you a code. Would you like me to read it? With my mouth full of Diet Coke, I nodded, yes, and then entered the ping ID code as Siri read it aloud, digit by digit. This is not artificial intelligence, folks. That's just intelligent. He says, yes, of course, many codes will autofill on the Mac if you have enabled messages in iCloud, but not all. And that is true. A lot of them just don't seem to work. So, yeah, the nod with AirPods Pro, the AirPod nod, we'll call it.
I started using it.
Same. Yeah. I forget where I was, but I've been wearing my AirPods more and more since I got the AirPods Pro Gen 2. And I was doing something somewhere, walking, and got a thing. And I just, you know, a quick little nod, and it read me the message. I guess it was when I was in New York or something. But yeah, the AirPods Pro Gen 2 has been. I'm really stoked about these, and I can almost guarantee you that I don't have advanced knowledge of this, so I'm just speculating, but there will be some kind of deal on them again for Black Friday from Apple because that's just how that be, right? I went and turned on hearing assistance in AirPods Pro Gen 2, and it has you take a hearing test. It will also, it offered to use a hearing test of mine that I had stored in health from 2 years ago, yep. Which tells me that was not taken with Apple's hearing test methods because those are new. But I have taken several hearing tests with my, with Apple's methods since that came out. It is
sure.
It's spot on with what I get at the audiologist. And I'm happy to report that despite bashing on the drums, for decades and decades, Apple still is insistent that I do not need any assistance with my hearing, which is awesome. I love that.
I've experienced the same, Dave, which is odd because I know I have enough tinnitus that it drives me nuts.
Sure.
But apparently I can still pick up the little tiny tones that they're sending me. And
I can attest to you being able to pick up the tiny tones, and that's not a, there's no joke backing that up.
Yeah. Like,
it's
But the, then the other thing, back to the AirPod, not ever so quickly, and then I'll relinquish to you, Adam. There's I've noticed I can use it to, when Siri will announce, hey, you've left your iPad and your backpack and your suitcase, it starts giving me all, you've left all this behind. All I have to do is not know, and she shuts up. Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Stop talking. Boom. You know, just not know. She stops talking, and I can go back to listening to my podcast.
Now, couple things. You have to turn that on, right? The nod thing. And then also, I think you have to turn on the audio announcements, which was also part of this tip. So if people are wondering, like, why I don't get the message announcements, you have, these are two features you have to go into your Siri settings and enable them. They're not, I don't believe they're on by default.
You have to enable them. And then I think there's something in the AirPod settings, which of course I can't look at right now because I don't have my AirPods on.
Right.
It's ridiculous that the only way to get to the AirPod settings is to go into settings, Bluetooth, and hit the little I, and then you get this whole world. That's where your hearing test is. That's where all that stuff is. It's a little wonky.
So then finally, I just want to comment on the hearing thing, because I think I brought this up and I never did the follow-up. I did end up using my AirPods Pro 2 for that concert that I went to, Toad the Wet Sprocket and Bare Naked Ladies, with the hearing protection. And Toad wasn't that loud. I think it was somewhere in the 80 to 90 dB range the whole time. Yeah. And then Bare Naked Ladies were 90 up into the hundreds. And that's when it really started kicking in. And it worked great, and it monitored everything the whole time, and it brought everything back down into that 80 range. Under 90, so
that's nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I assume it sounded good.
Sounded good to me. Yeah. It sounded great.
And that's that, because I've used it too. That is something that you turn on and leave on all the time, and it just kicks in when it needs to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you have to be in the transparency mode or whatever, but yeah.
Right. You can't be in noise cancellation mode.
Yes. Really? Oh, I would have been in. Interesting. Okay.
Well, noise cancellation.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't just turn on.
Sure.
I think it makes sense now. I think it will protect your hearing in noise cancellation mode, but not letting, like, it might not sound as good.
It seems to muffle the higher end when you do that. But
that's interesting. I mean, I would assume in noise cancellation mode, that noise shouldn't be coming, a lot of that noise shouldn't be coming in, right?
Right. Right. I don't know. I haven't tried it in noise cancel. I got to do that. I got to.
I actually use it.
Anyway, I just want to let know people. It did work, and it worked great, and it was kind of fun even to, like, on my Apple Watch, you know, watch the, you could see the actual dB, you know, on the Apple Watch. But
I leave a dB, the whatever it's called, the, you know, the sound meter, as one of the complications on the face of my Apple Watch. So no matter where I am, I can look quick and see, like right now, I mean, it's right in front of my face, but I'm at about 78 dB when I'm projecting, you know. But it's super helpful to know, like, oh, yeah, that's where it is. Yep. Okay, great. So, yep. And cool. It's fairly accurate. I have put that up against a tuned dB meter used by the guy who does front of house for Kenny Chesney, this guy Robert Scoville. I did an interview with Robert Scoville earlier this year on Gig Gab, and we got really nerdy about sound. I might drop that in our Mac Geek Gab feed for you folks to listen to. Feel free to skip it,
I think
there's something in there that we'd all like. But I put it up against his. I was actually at a Kenny Chesney show standing next to him while he was mixing and put my watch up against his dB meter, and it was like, yeah, man, it's 103 up here, buddy. He's like, yep. He actually said to me before the show started, he's like, Dave, listen, I'm not going to be offended if you wear earplugs. Like, Robert, right. I was 100% going to wear earplugs, and I didn't even think that you might be offended.
Right?
Like, dude. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
All right. Todd has something driving him crazy, he says. He says, it drives me crazy that you cannot right-click on a photo to get at the export command. When you click on the file menu, export is below, which leads to export one photo and export unmodified original for one photo. I think it'll, the number will change depending upon the number of photos you have selected. Correct. But he says, then off to the far right in grayed out text are the shortcut keys. I've been using the Mac since the 128K. I know the shortcut keys are to the right, but somehow just the other day I saw Shift Command E, which is the shortcut to export photos and photos. There's peace in the world again.
Love it. Yep.
Yeah. I don't export photos often, but I know people do. The one that I like always is the unmodified originals. You know, if people want to like back up photos or, cause you know, often you go into your photos, you don't even think about it, right? You've cropped it at some point or you've done some sort of adjustment or edited it, enhanced it in some way. And maybe you want to get back to the original, but you don't want to like revert it back. You want to leave it the way it was in photos so you can export it out unmodified.
I find myself, Todd's tip definitely resonated with me. I find myself exporting photos frequently enough that I'm frustrated by the fact that you can't right click and export a photo.
I started doing it as soon as I read that's one of the ones that fell right into my workflow. It's like, oh, boom, there it is. So thank you.
Yep.
All right. Well, shall I take us to Dan?
Please.
All right. So Dan wrote in with kind of a long one and he buried the lead, and the lead is the quick tip that I'm going to share. But I will say that Dan, he found a way to use notes to make it into a to-do list and a rather effective one, but it's long. And so I'm going to take some time to play with it, maybe come up with a tutorial or something that could be posted or something along those lines, because using notes for a to-do list seems pretty cool because it syncs so nicely across and it isn't always popping up on your calendar. That being said, he uses notes, and like me, Dan was annoyed that when you put in a hyperlink in notes, it comes up in this very difficult to see yellow. That's its default, because multicolor highlights is what's the default.
Right.
But he says if you go into system settings, appearance, accent colors, you change it from multicolor to blue, or if you like magenta or whatever color you like, I pick up blue the best. I changed it to blue and boom. Now when I put hyperlinks in notes, it comes up blue. Oh, it's so much easier on the eyes. Dan, you buried the lead, man.
Well, but that's like burying the lead is the essence of quick tips. Right. It's the thing that Dan does automatically, or any of us do automatically, because it's in our workflow. And then when one of us that doesn't do it sees it, it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Yeah. How did you bury the lead? So, yeah.
Because I would go in and it would highlight the link and I would change the color to blue. And then if you would mess with the link at all, it went right back to that hard to see faded yellow.
Yep.
Stop it.
So
it doesn't do that anymore.
That's a global setting, though, right? So, like, once you've done that, it's going to change that feature and all.
But I'm okay with that because my eye sees the blue so well. So you're going to have to find a color you really like.
Yeah, it's just a bummer that I wonder why they don't offer some sort of override. You know, like you know how they do with like setting custom keyboard shortcuts. You could do it on a per app basis. It'd be nice if they could extend that to say, okay, I'm happy with multicolor as the default. But for this one app, use this color.
Yes. And I'm looking in system settings on notes, and I don't see anything about colors.
No, yeah. No, I think that's absolutely right. It's just a bummer. Yeah. You know, it's one of those Apple-y Apple things.
Yes.
Where
Apple-y Apple things.
Exactly.
Right? It's like, you will do it this way, and you will like it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yes. What's the problem? There's no problem. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yepper. Tony tells us, shares a little tip. The new Apple keyboards have the new key below the F13 key. It is a context menu key, similar to like a right click. And he says, I was curious if I could add it to my previous model keyboard. System preferences, keyboard, keyboard shortcuts, keyboard, show contextual menu. And the default is control return. So you can do this. He says, but I changed it to F13, which I don't use for anything. And that way it almost matches the new keyboard. So you can assign a key that you never use, like F13, to this show contextual menu keyboard shortcut. And that way you can get your keyboard shortcuts up. So, yeah.
Wait, on my extended keyboard, under F13 is the function key for me. But I have an old keyboard. So you're saying the new keyboards have some sort of new key?
Yeah, there's a key to show I think Apple calls it the context menu key. It's like right clicking, right? It wherever you are, it brings up the context menu of things. So, yeah. So you can approximate this. Nice. Again, system prep, and we'll put the whole string of things in there in the show notes, but it's system preferences. Keyboard shortcuts, keyboard show contextual.
And this only works with new keyboards, or is this on old keyboards?
This is how to that's the tip, is how Tony is teaching us how to map it on an old keyboard. Yes.
Got you. Okay.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yep. So speaking of mapping, last week we had the tip about shift and enter and just enter by itself. So I used your keyboard Maestro and I got it set, and it was doing it for everything. And so I went, this is terrible. And then I went in keyboard Maestro and said, only do it for messages and ChatGPT. I can't tell you how many times my apparently I'm subconsciously or unconsciously hitting shift and enter. And now I keep sending messages,
dude.
But I'm getting there. I'm going to keep it. I'm going to work with it until it goes back to normal, because I've been hitting shift enter to get to a new line so I don't send a message, and I've been sending a message.
You just described my week, because I created those shortcuts during the show, right, to test them and make sure they work. And then, of course, it's Keyboard Maestro, so it syncs to every Mac that I have. And I don't need to say, you said it. Like, I've been, I'm fumbling and my fingers don't know what they're doing anymore. Yeah, maybe that's why I haven't been able to sleep this week. My mind is learning new things. Unlearning.
Like, son of a gun.
Yeah.
How did that? Oh, that's right. I have that keyboard remapping. So, yeah.
But every time it happens, I'm like, this is 100% my fault and my doing, and I want it this way. However,
it's going to take some time to unlearn. And then the next time you get a new Mac, you're going to be, actually, it syncs across. It should work.
It'll work. It'll just be there. Yeah.
Well, would you like to learn something else new, Dave?
I would.
John has one for us. He says, good morning, gentlemen. Oh, there's that word again.
Oh, no.
Ooh.
I often make disk images, sometimes encrypted, using File Utility. I noticed that making them on an external hard drive often fails with the error, operation failed with status 1, operation not permitted. If you see this, he says, go into System Settings, Privacy and Security, Full Disk Access, and make sure that Disk Utility has full disk access by adding it from the Applications folder. If it was not listed, his wasn't. So that will allow you to continue to make disk images. So disk utility needs permissions. I don't know why it wouldn't have that by default, but there you go.
Why isn't it asking for it either? Prompting to like...
Right?
I hate those errors that go, code 1. What's code 1? Come on, man. Just ask for the permission.
Just ask. But
one thing, and I think we probably covered it on here, but I learned several weeks back, if not several months back, is that, and I don't think I ever knew this, is that you can drag an application into that settings window for full disk permission or many other settings. Hey, it wants to be able to do this, wants to be able to do that. How do you add it? Instead of hitting the little plus sign and looking for it, you can just drag the application right on top of that settings window, and it comes up great.
Yep, it's true.
I was just gonna say one thing about that dialogue I wish that developers maybe had a way, or Apple forced developers to like add some sort of explanation as to why certain apps need certain levels of access. Like, I often don't understand, like, why is this app asking for access to you know, audio recording or screen recording or whatever. It's like sometimes it feels odd, and I'm sure there's a very good reason for it, but yeah.
Yep. Yep. One of my favorites in Sequoia macOS 15 is when I launch an app and it asks for access to devices on the local network.
Yeah. And that one's the most confusing.
And it's for printing is what it is. Because some
just say that
that's the thing, right? Like the Mac should tell me what triggered this. You went to print and it wants to talk to a device on the local network, which isn't entirely correct because I'm just telling it to print and the system is handling the printing. So like, that's the one that feels like I want to tell this app no to this question, right, and yet still allow it to print. I believe, especially with macOS 15 and the, you know, the expiring reminders and all of that, I think Apple's gone too far.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah. It's very Windows Vista E.
it's Vista. I feel like we burned our opportunity on this, because didn't we call like three OSs ago the one that was flaky, the Windows Vista? You know, this one's not unstable. So, which don't get me wrong, like super happy about that. but it is like, we're going to get alert blindness. I know we've talked about this before, but you know,
Yep.
Nibs in the UK shared a tip in our Discord that actually for me was a tip in reverse. And the tip is that, you can go into your reminders setting on your Mac, and you can do this on your phone too, and set a notification for all day reminders so that if you have, you can, because in reminders, you can set reminders to be timed reminders. So you could say, you know, remind me at 10 a.m. to do this, or you can just say, remind me tomorrow to do this. And then it's an untimed reminder. You can set in settings a notification time for all of your untimed reminders so that you still get that notification. And it's in reminders settings and then in all day reminders, and you can show a today notification, and the default is 9 a.m. When I saw this, I thought, oh my gosh, I need to be able to turn that off. So I did. I went in and turned it off because I don't need, all of my reminders are untimed, and I don't need reminders. I don't need a slew of notifications at 9 a.m. that talk about alert blindness. I just click them and turn them off 100% of the time. I just turned that off, and now I don't get that 9 a.m. deluge. I already get it from Slack and everything else. It's like, yeah, no, I don't. No, 9 a.m.
Change it to 9:01, Dave.
That'll make it better. Yeah, right as soon as I've settled back into my work from being distracted by all the 9 a.m. notifications that are unnecessary. Now at 9:01. Awesome. Amazing. Pete, can you make sure to text me at 9:02 a.m. every day just to continue?
Hold on, let me remind myself at 8:59 to remind you in 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Fun stuff. If you've got quick tips, folks, feedback at MacGeekGab.com. We would love to hear from you.
Don't send them there. Send them to feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
What did you say, Pete? Feedback at MacGeekGab.com?
That sounds right. Sounds right to me. All right, folks, picture your company's security like a college campus quad. You've got those nice brick paths, the company-approved devices, right, and IT-managed apps. But where do people actually go? You're right. The shortcuts through the grass, of course. Those would be the unmanaged devices, shadow IT apps, and contractors with mysterious laptops that look older than some of your interns. Most security tools, they stick to the brick paths. But our sponsor, 1Password Extended Access Management, it's the first solution that chases down those grassy shortcuts, ensuring every device is known, every credential is strong, and every app is visible. It's like having a security guard who also knows your entire company network and your lunch order. Don't get caught letting your data frolic freely through the weeds. Check out our sponsor, 1Password Extended Access Management, today at 1Password.com/MGG. That's 1Password.com/MGG, because securing shortcuts doesn't have to feel like chasing squirrels in a park. And our thanks to 1Password and 1Password Extended Access Management for sponsoring this episode. All right, folks, so you know I've been using OWC's gear for decades, and even right now, I can count at least three pieces on my desk here in the studio, right? There's a dock, there's a hub, and there's an external SSD that's so fast it feels like it's channeling warp drive. Seriously, OWC's gear is my secret weapon for keeping my setup running like a charm, and this Black Friday, OWC is bringing you savings of up to 85%. You heard that right. From high-speed storage to Thunderbolt docks and even certified used Macs, they've got everything you need to supercharge your Apple experience. Their OWC Express 1M2 portable drive is a beast, blazing fast at up to 3,151 megabytes per second. I know, with rugged aircraft-grade aluminum to keep your data safe. If this drive were any cooler, I'd need a sweater just to use it. Don't get caught with subpar gear. Head over to our friends and our sponsor, MacSales.com, and grab these deals while they last. Your Mac deserves the best, and OWC delivers every time. Again, MacSales.com. Go check it out. You're going to love it. And our thanks to OWC at MacSales.com for sponsoring this episode. Have you ever Googled yourself and wondered why the internet knows you like mint chocolate chip ice cream, secretly love cat videos, and once binge-watched 32 hours of space documentaries? Enter our sponsor, Incogni. Incogni is your personal data bouncer, shooing away those shady data brokers who collect, sell, and profit off of your private info without even sending you a thank you card. Here's the magic. Incogni contacts these brokers on your behalf, demands they delete your data, and even keeps checking to ensure it stays gone. It's like having a secret agent for your personal privacy, only without the tuxedo. Plus, their family and friends plan lets you protect up to four others. So yes, even grandma's browsing history can be safe from prying eyes. Because let's face it, no one wants to spend their weekend explaining to their bank why they apparently bought 400 inflatable flamingos from an online scammer in Moldova. Seriously, this is the kind of tech we've been waiting for. Finally, something that works for you instead of tracking your every move. So don't get caught letting your personal data star in a spammer's greatest hits collection. Take your personal data back with Incogni. Use code MACGEEK at incogni.com/MACGEEK and get 60% off an annual plan. That's code MACGEEK at Incogni, incogni.com/MACGEEK, and get 60% off an annual plan. And our thanks to Incogni for sponsoring this episode.
So I've got an early Christmas gift for everybody. I'm going to read this next review that comes from the United Kingdom, but I'm not going to use a British accent. You're welcome.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you for that, Pete.
Yeah. So many tips and nothing's a problem. Only an opportunity to learn. 5 stars, by the way. This is their motto, and they live by it, helping you with your problems if you need, and in doing so, helping us to learn how to fix or avoid a problem. A family-friendly show, but beware of their cool stuff found sections that can be very pocket-unfriendly when you realize you need all these excellent things you never knew about. 7 years a follower of their show, and I love how they always keep me interested. And then I am desperately waiting for the next episode. And that's from S. Cranmer in the United Kingdom.
I actually got I got to meet S. Cranmer when when the whole family was over in the UK. We had a little meetup at a pub near where we were staying one night, and he was one of the people that came down. It was actually really nice.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, and we got another one from Mexico. Excepcional. Uno de los mejores podcasts sobre productos y plataformas de Apple. Siempre aprendes algún tip, manda preguntas y ellos tratan de ayudar en inglés. Años de recomendaciones y apoyo a la comunidad Apple. And basically what they're saying is one of the best podcasts about Apple products and platforms. I always learn something with a new tip. You can send questions and they try to help in English. Years of recommendations and support for the Apple community. So thank you so much from Mr. Yailis. Y-A-I-L-I-S. Yailis. I'm sorry for butchering it.
I have one thing to say to that review, and that is no te dejes atrapar. So don't get caught.
There you go.
Yeah. MacGeekGab.com/review is the place to go. We make it easy for you to review the show, and we really love to get those 5-star reviews. Not really any stars, but you know, the 5 is, we like those better, I guess. I don't know.
Hey, Dave. 3 stars,
hey, Adam.
On the window show.
I just have to comment. I was listening to those ads, right?
Yep.
That last Incogni ad, those examples seemed oddly specific.
Did they?
Just saying.
How does ChatGPT know
about your flamingos, Dave?
About my flamingos. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, I tried to make the ads interesting. I've always tried to make the ads interesting. In addition, I tried to make the ads short. For a variety of reasons, but you know, certainly one of the top ones is we are respectful of your time and we want to tell you about these cool sponsors that we have, but we want to do it efficiently. So I do pre-record the ads for the show most of the time. We play them in so that it's in the flow, obviously. About a year ago, I realized that even though I was trying to make the ads different each time, when I would get the same set of talking points, my brain would basically make the same script. And so I now have ChatGPT make the scripts for almost every ad you hear us read. And I tell it to make it different from the last one and add in some little Easter eggs in there so that we all kind of have some fun as we're listening to them. Even if it's the same sponsor you've heard before, you get to hear it a little bit differently and we all have some fun together. So I haven't pushed the limits of what the sponsors will accept because, you know, it's fun, but we don't want to get caught. I want to share one other thing about ads now that we're here, because this is probably going to start happening. I believe I talked on this show about the privacy pixel or a proxy that I created back in August while I was at Podcast Movement, so that we could put the industry's third-party redirects in our RSS enclosures.
Right.
Right, so that they can confirm the download and all that stuff, but I want to protect your IP address. And so we are going to start doing that on this show. I've been doing it on Business Brain now for several months. That was the first show I tested with, and it's going spectacularly. And one of the major benefits is there are sponsors. I would say half of the sponsors we have on Business Brain right now would not be on that show if we did not allow pixels. And they are all okay with the way we're doing these pixels, mostly obscuring who you are specifically, but still giving some like geographic data and things like that so that they can know that, okay, well, someone in New Hampshire listened to this episode. Okay, great. They're in the DMA of the Boston area. Like, those things are important. And also they can confirm that someone actually downloaded the show. And so they get their numbers and all that stuff. I'm telling you this because I know lots of you use Overcast. And Overcast right now for our show does reports that we don't use any trackers. It is about to start reporting that we use trackers, and that's going to be true. I'm going to work with Marco and hopefully have him put something in there about the Backbeat Media privacy pixel that it communicates that it protects you from being actually being tracked. That's not going to be in there on day one. And so I just wanted to say that here. You are being protected by us. We're not going to beat a whole lot of drums about this in public. And that's largely because the podcast industry has said, listen, just like Nielsen had before, this is nothing new. It's nothing bad. This is not negative, although the words I'm going to use might sound that way. We need a shared delusion in every industry about how advertising can track success and performance. And this is the one the podcast industry has chosen. Nielsen was far more imperfect than what we're doing here. But basically, nobody talked about how imperfect Nielsen was. We just all accepted it in the industry and it was fine. The same thing is happening in podcasting and it's totally okay. And our thing will still protect you, even though we were not out there beating drums and, you know, wearing T-shirts that says it. The industry basically has said, don't talk about it so much. So we're happy to talk about it here. We just don't expect a press release about this, but know that you're being protected. Right? Good.
Yeah.
Did I say that right? Like, do you guys have anything?
Yeah,
to add
I think.
To that?
Yeah, I think so. And I do remember you talking about that back when you came back from Podcast Movement.
Yep. Yeah. So it's working. It's working way better than I ever anticipated because I didn't think the attribution trackers were going to be okay with it. And for the most part, they all seem like, yeah, just it's like yeah. It's fine. It's fine, Dave. Stop talking. Like, okay, yeah. Got it.
Do you mind if I say something positive about one of your advertisers?
I don't. It's our advertisers, but that's okay.
Well, you know what I meant.
Yeah, I do.
So I took up the Incogni deal and I put in everything and the Apple card rejected the payment. Oh man. So I went back and I approved it. And the Apple card said, oh yeah, go ahead. Now you can do it. I went, all right, good. So I went back and filled it all out and I paid full price. I'm like, oh man. Cause it took the code out when it refreshed the screen. So I went back to Incogni and said, hey, can you give me the, you know, $18 or so back? And they're like, yeah, we can't do a partial refund. They responded right away. They go, can't do a partial refund, cancel it, and we'll give you your money back right now.
Ah, okay.
And they did. So I got my money back right away, and I re-signed up. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to enter all this information again about my email addresses and all that kind of stuff. And went back and started it back up. And it was all there. It worked. So it's super fast and a responsive customer service. And I really appreciated that.
Amazing. I'm curious to hear about your experience with them. I haven't used it yet myself. Which is why you didn't.
So far, they've saved me over 215 hours, apparently, and according to their dashboard, to send. Hey, can you take me off your list, people, please?
Cool. That's amazing.
And over 300 removals. I had no idea I was on 300 lists.
Well, that's.
I'm on 3,000, probably 10,000. Who knows?
Dude.
Well, at least.
Yeah, I'm curious to see my numbers, but not in like, it's more like the I can't turn my eyes away from a train wreck curious, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, good stuff. Hey, other good stuff. I want, while we're in the show business here, I want to thank all of our premium subscribers whose contributions have come in recently. I'm trying to think about a better way to do this. So if anybody who's listening says, I wish you guys would do it this way, feedback@macgeekab.com. Tell us. I want to acknowledge everyone, but I know it takes a couple of minutes, and so I'm open, please, suggestions. Until we have a better plan, or maybe this is the best one. Thanks to Daniel in San Diego for his $50 contribution. Thanks to Harry in Canyon Country and Raymond in Edmonton for your $30 contributions. And thanks to the following for $25 contributions. Timothy in Coralville, Mike in Onchan, Jed in New Jersey, Charles in Midlothian, Harvey in Shoreham, Daniel in Levittown, John in Fredericton, Mark in Knoxville, Craig in New Lambton, Scott in Columbia, Peter in Seidel, Gary in Houston, Robert in Paso Robles, Rick in Traverse City, Brian in Walton Hills, and Jim in Myrtle Beach. Thank you for your $25 contributions. Thanks to Bob and Lepesh for your $15 contribution and $10 contributions. Thanks to Jason in Charlestown, Wagner in Allen, Robert in Columbiana, James in San Antonio, Chris in Charleywood, Bill in somewhere parts unknown, Barry in Des Plaines, or elsewhere. Timothy in West Windsor, Mark in Vero Beach, Abel in Santa Rosa, Kevin in Edison, Neil in West Hartford, Michael in Robbins, Santiago in Palm City, Phil in Summers, Mark in Coopersburg, Donald in Furlong, Frank in Voorhees, Nick in Marquette, Scott in Bourbonnais, Cal in Russellville, Jeremiah in Edgewater, Brian in Southbury, and John in Wake Forest. Thank you. You all rock.
Yeah.
Let's do some questions. And you can learn about the premium program, of course, at MacGeekGab.com/premium. And we love you for it.
Absolutely. Yep.
Let's do it. Questions.
Right. Yeah. So questions. I was looking for the questions banner. There it is. It's coming up now. So the first question comes from Gary. How do I extend AppleCare Plus as month to month? G'day, MGG gents. I downloaded the Apple Store app to my phone because I'm thinking of getting a newer Apple Watch since mine is 2 years old. I was looking at the information for my product. I just happened to notice that the AppleCare Plus on my M1 Mac will expire January 11th, 2025. I was looking at information on the Apple site, etc., and it looks like I can extend my coverage with an annual plan, and it says I have to do it within 45 days of expiration. I'm not seeing an option to renew it on the site. Do I actually have to wait for the warranty to run out before I can do so? Or is my Mac too old? The iMac was purchased on January 13th, 2023. Thanks for the show and keep them coming. Thanks, Gary.
Yeah. Gary's not going to like this answer.
Okay.
Boy. I was trying to do the research to actually find this. I think it's buried deep in your AppleCare Plus terms and conditions somewhere. I was having trouble finding it, but I'm pretty sure I'm 99.9% sure the answer is you can't. You cannot switch from a yearly plan to a month-to-month plan at all, which is why I started buying the month-to-month plan up front, because the month-to-month, you just continue till you don't want to pay anymore. Obviously, the advantage to Apple there is probably most of us are going to forget that we have a product on month-to-month and forget to turn it off at some point. So I have to actually go back and review mine. You know, you can go through your devices list and see what's on AppleCare and what's on month to month and stuff like that. But yeah, you cannot do it. You can't extend the yearly. And in the terms of service, it's worth noting, Apple does not need to extend your yearly. They just do, but there's specific terms in there that says they don't have any obligation to extend it. Obviously they let you, but
sure.
Yeah. So you really can't. You have to kind of decide when you're buying the device if you're going to do yearly, you know, the 2 year, whatever it's at, the terms are, or the month to month, which Apple calls, they have a different term for it, but basically the month to month plan, the pay as you go plan or whatever. So that's why I switched. I mean, that was the main reason I switched way back in the day, is I just decided this is a better option for me because I can keep going as long as I have the device. And I don't know how long I'm going to have this device or this product. Whereas yearly, I think you can do once. The other thing to be aware of is you can transfer your AppleCare Plus to a new owner. And I think you're only allowed to do that one time under the terms and conditions. Another thing to know about the terms and conditions is they are set depending upon when you bought the device. So every time they change them, you know, you're sort of grandfathered into whatever term you signed up for originally. So a lot of the stuff I'm talking about is the more recent plans. If you go further back, there's different terms and conditions. And on Apple's terms and conditions page, they'll have it listed out. Hey, if you bought your AppleCare Plus on this date, these are your terms and conditions. If you bought between these dates, these are your terms and conditions.
Oh, wow.
So it gets really complicated very, very quickly. But yeah, unfortunately, you cannot transition between month to month and yearly. I don't think you can go the other way either, but that I'm less sure of. I don't know.
Huh.
Oh, and Paul Conway on Discord was saying that there are some exceptions to the month-to-month coverage, too. He says he has a 2020 iPad Pro, and it was on the list that he couldn't cover his Apple Pencil and Magic Keyboard. They were covered originally when he purchased the iPad, but...
Yeah, that's another interesting nuance to this is you really want to look at what's covered, because I think back in the day, and I'm assuming it's still the same, if you bought a Mac and a monitor at the same time, I think the monitor is automatically covered by your Apple Care package, or
it was.
I don't know if that's, and maybe that's not the same for month to month. Maybe that's only in the yearly. So you gotta like look through those terms and conditions.
Your airport router was also covered. Yeah. You know, if you had Apple Care on a device. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So read the details, people, because there's nuance in there, unfortunately. But
Adam, I've never gone with month to month. Do you know off the top of your head, is it the same price?
No, I think
for a year,
ultimately more expensive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But you're gaining the advantage. And I think month to month is only offered. Do they even offer non-plus plans now?
No. Not to my knowledge. I bet it, you know, what do I know? I'm the guy that hasn't slept.
Because the plus, I think, adds the, like, theft loss protection.
Accident protection or whatever. Or not theft loss, accident protection. I think if you want that theft loss, Tony, you have to go higher.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway. No, I mean, I mainly do the month-to-month, especially with, like, my iPhones and stuff like that, because I hand them down in the family, and so we transfer that AppleCare to the next person down the line, and, you know, it just continues, and...
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, then everything's covered, like, for forever. But I'm sure, like, I need to go back and review, because I'm sure I'm paying for AppleCare devices that I'm either not using or not in use anymore. I can almost guarantee it.
Oh, yeah. That's a good, review your AppleCare. Yeah, that's a good tip. Yep.
Because Apple just doesn't turn it off for you.
Right.
Keep that income coming. Keep those cards and letters coming.
I wonder if those like, you know, subscription removal services would think to look at that stuff. Maybe.
I would think so. Yeah. I mean, I think they require you, though, to them plug. You have to, like, plug in all your login details. That's the one thing that always
gets,
like,
a little
weirds me out a little bit.
I think Experian bought the one, though. I forget the name of the one we used to use, and Experian bought them.
Interesting.
And I think, Dave, am I wrong? Does Mint Mobile use, like, Allstate or something like that? And they offer you I think it's like a $7 a month plan for your phone.
They do offer it. I've never bought it, so I don't know who they use.
FYI, Porthos John in the Discord chat says that if you trade your Apple devices in, they will auto terminate your month to month subscription, which makes sense.
But the
main reason I buy the month to month is because I know I'm not going to, like, get rid of them. If I knew I was going to get rid of the product in 2 years, I'm just going to do the annual plan. Right.
Right.
Like, in 2 to 3 years, I'm just doing the annual plan. I'm just extending my coverage. But yeah, I do the month to month because, I mean, I keep my stuff forever now. Like, I don't upgrade that often.
Yeah. Interesting. Huh. All right. Shall we go on to Mike?
We shall. Am I reading it?
I think Adam's reading it. I can read it. Doesn't matter.
Mike is.
Oh, wait. I was? Did I?
That's what it said on the thing that you were going to read, Mike.
Oh, did I just? I think I just removed it. Hold on. While I vamp here a little bit. I'm lost. So if somebody has it handy, go for it.
You know what? You want me to do Joe? Will you look for Mike?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep, go for it.
Okay. So Joe writes in. He goes, "Hi, guys. Dave is familiar with my setup, so can probably respond more easily. I've been using a Synology NAS to store a media collection using Plex and as a supplementary Time Machine backup. The thing is, configuring and maintaining the Synology is a pain in the rear end. Sometimes. That's Pete's editorial comment there. But not always. I'm a bit of a nerd. I listen to MGG, after all. But I am not interested in learning and staying up to date on Synology systems, which are the opposite of user-friendly." Okay. And now, I see that. I get that. I'm sorry. I keep editorializing.
It's okay.
In the Synology security issues I've been reading about, I'm seriously considering ditching the NAS and using the available M2 Mac Mini as a server. What am I giving up by abandoning the NAS? Cheers, Joe.
I agree with some of your editorialization, Pete, that Synology is fairly user-friendly for me. And it is more user-friendly objectively than lots of other NAS systems. However, it is a new operating system to learn, and it's not, it's the most Apple-like of all the NAS web interfaces, but that doesn't mean it's Apple-like. There are three different places to go and set things, and it's not a linear path to do some stuff. Once you know it, it makes sense, but it's not intuitive in the way that, you know, just anyone can just bounce in there. And to Joe's point, he doesn't want to stay up to date on Synology. So, like, that's okay. As far as the security issues, I did want to address that. There was a recent exploit that was discovered with Synology Photos. It was made into a big deal by some of the articles about it. And it was a big deal But the thing is, most people don't have Synology Photos installed. The articles made it sound like it was installed and activated by default on everything. And it's only true on the Synology B station, which is their sort of it's like a NAS light, if you will. It's NAS for people who don't want to have to manage a NAS like Joe. And it does some things, but, you know, the services are just on, and Photos is one of the things that's just on. They have patched that bug, and all is well in the world again, so long as you stay up to date on it. But as far as I know, that's really the only big one that's happened recently. As for what, to answer your question, macOS isn't really built to be a server, right? I know it's running Unix underneath, so like it can be, but the GUI that we call macOS is not really built as a server operating system. So some things just aren't available on it. For example, if you want to run Synology Office, which is their self-hosted Google Drive, Sheets, Docs thing, then you'd need some third-party software to do that. And now you're back in the world of managing a third-party server that happens to be running on macOS as well. And that may or may not be any different. However, if you just want to run a Plex server and use it for Time Machine backups, then obviously that's something macOS can handle. And your Mac Mini has a way faster CPU than the Synology disk station that most of us would have in our homes. Way faster. So for all that video transcoding that Plex might want to do, your Mac is going to be like eons faster than what the Synology can do. So you'd be giving up fault tolerant storage that the Synology has, right? Because your Mac has one drive and the Synology, you know, you've packed plenty of drives into it. You could mitigate that by getting something like the OWC Mercury Elite Pro Quad or the Thunder Bay Mini. You're going to spend for those about like in the rounding error category. It's basically you're spending the same on that box that you would be on the Synology box and then putting drives in it in order to get that fault tolerant storage and Mondo storage. So, you know, and now you got to manage that thing, but it is managed by macOS. Right. If you want, you could use software and that sort of thing, but macOS can do it. So, you know, it's a trade off, but you get the faster CPU of the Mac Mini, which to me is the allure of it. But I'm comfortable with Synology. So I see you nodding along, Adam.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I'm good with all those things. I mean, the biggest one is the fault tolerance and the drives and stuff like that. And again, for that single use scenario, though, it's a really nice way to, you know, use a Mac Mini that you may not otherwise be using. Right.
Yes. So. Yeah.
Yeah. So I use both. And let me first start off with the addressing some of the things. If you've already got the Synology, here's the thing, Joe, is that I had the same issues. It was difficult to learn, and I still don't know it completely, but I've, being a pilot, I don't have to memorize the flight manual. I have to know where to go to find the answer. And Synology makes that easy. In the top right corner, there's a little search window, and any setting you're looking for, if you type that in there, it will almost assuredly take you right to the setting for which you are looking. And often there's a little eye, and you click on that and go, and it comes up and says, hey, this is what's going on. And I type that into ChatGPT and go, okay, what does this really mean? And often get the answer. So I'm able to muddle my way through with Synology most of the time, though I am having a difficulty with, and Dave, I'm going to need your help, I know, and then maybe it'll be a show topic in the future, why one of my drives keeps going and not playing. I got two Synology stations. One keeps going, hey, abnormal, and I'm not syncing. And I'm like, I put it all in, and the next day it's off again. But that's a whole nother thing. And finally, Joe, there are lots of YouTube videos on how to do this in Synology and how to do that in Synology. And being a visual learner, I find that super helpful. But that being said, I also use a Mac Mini for my media server. I run Plex on it. I run channels on it. And man, one of the beautiful things in channels is you can tell it, make my CPU hurt, find the commercials and skip them. So when I'm watching a television show, it will automatically skip right through. And I don't think that the Synology may do that with channels, but not when you can run 8 cores of a CPU on a Mac Mini. It won't be nearly as effective. So I do use both. Is Synology frustrating? Sometimes, yeah. But I've also learned to muddle through using those tips, which is the search window and asking ChatGPT, what does this really mean? What happens if I change this setting? And frequently get a pretty good answer. So
sometimes it's strong and wrong.
Yeah, the thing I'll add to that. The thing I'll add to that with the Synology is, yeah, you do have to sometimes figure some stuff out. But the reality is it's sort of the Ron Popeil method. You have to figure it out once and you set it and you forget it. Like once you've done the work, for the most part, you know, you mentioned occasionally you might have the odd issue, but I mean, that's just computers. Once you've done it, it's done and you're done. Like I don't go in there and mess with my Plex, or I don't go in there and mess with my Time Machine backups, right?
Yep, it for sure. There is one piece of software that might be interesting to anyone thinking of using a Mac Mini as kind of the, you know, the headless server of your house, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that is a piece of software called OwnCloud. It's available. It's free for community use, and then if you're going to use it for, you know, your company or whatever, then you pay for it for sure. But it gives you control like a NAS would. It has spaces, which is like managing files on a network drive. It has web office, which is like only office and all of those things kind of pulled together, so you can, you know, tie your work documents, and it kind of like Synology Office. So looking into OwnCloud again, if you're mm-hmm. using that, might be interesting. I looked at it, you know, a couple of years ago when I was kind of having this thought process of, oh, should I stick with Synology or should I just take an old Mac and repurpose it or whatever? And so OwnCloud is worth looking at there. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, well.
Cool. All right. I found my place. Before we quickly move on, I do want to comment. John in the Discord chat pointed out from our earlier conversation about AppleCare Plus, AppleCare Plus on the Mac is not available month to month at all. So just FYI, everything we were talking about applies to, you know, for month to month is just applying to other devices outside the Mac. So just to clarify that.
Thank you.
All right. So Mike had a question. He says, gentleman and the other guy.
I love that. Oh, that's perfect.
I know who he's talking about.
Same.
Love it. He says, long time. Yeah, touch of gray. Glad to hear Adam again, too. Well, glad to hear from you. And thank you. I also have a touch of gray, so I think we're in the same camp. But he says, hoping you can fix this without losing the entire message string. We have a family message string that goes back and back and back with lots of photos of kids, grandkids, and so on. It works fantastic on all my devices except my MacBook Pro M1. I still see all the messages come into the string, but alas, no reply box is present at the bottom to reply. I have to move to another device like a Neanderthal to reply. So he wants to know, how do we fix this? He says, as always, your help is greatly appreciated.
I hope we can help. I've seen this before. So and it's, I've made it go away, but that doesn't mean I know how I did that.
You sold your computer.
Right. So it shows up in messages as a, like a read only thing, like almost like you've been removed from the chat. And I think that's an important way to frame how we might approach this. So the first thing would be go into messages, settings, iMessage, and click like sync now and make sure it's doing its syncing. If that doesn't work, sign out of iMessage, reboot, sign back in, and see if that unsticks things. I know from Mike that that did not work for him. So the other thing to kind of, as we tug on this thread of, okay, it's read-only, Messages doesn't think I am able to participate in this anymore, but clearly you are, because your phone and other devices can do it. It's just this one Mac that says no. So in Messages, you go into settings, and there's the list of addresses that are that you can receive and reply from. And if that message thread includes either a version of you, an address for you, an old phone number, an old email address that you, or a current one that you've unchecked there, this could happen. Or if it's an old one, this could happen. And so the way I would approach this is, well, A, check that list and look and figure out which address of yours this chat has. And then either have you on your other device or someone else add a current version of you to the chat. I remember we had to do this with our daughter when she moved. We had our family chat was based on phone numbers. And when she moved to Italy, you know, she gave up her U.S. number. Well, actually, she converted it to a Google Voice number, but it's no longer part of her Apple ID. And therefore, we needed to add her with her iCloud email address. And then, you know, that kind of brought everything back. I still have a weird problem, by the way. My son's, it just went away. This is totally separate. And yes, I'm taking personal privilege on a tangent here. My son and daughter were part of our family group chat, or part of their iCloud identity had their at MacObserver.com addresses. Obviously, we sold that domain. They don't use those addresses anymore. They're not part of it. In Find My, when I see my daughter, she is her old at MacObserver.com address. I don't get to see her name because it's not part of our iCloud thing, and I can't figure out how to fix that. But anyway, back to you, Mike. My son was exactly the same way. Not quite back to Mike. My son was the same way. And then magically, recently, it just fixed. So I don't know about that. But 3 years later, here we are. But hopefully, Mike, adding you again in there would be the trick. We don't know, but
sounds logical to me. I mean, it's worth checking that for sure.
For sure. Yeah. So it's a weird thing. Yeah.
So you need to ask Lucas what he changed.
I did. Oh, can you? I immediately texted him. I'm like, dude, how did you do this? He's like, I didn't do anything. I'm like, yeah, but is that true?
Sure.
Like, he's a way better programmer than me. Go ahead.
He edited his Etsy host file.
Oh, if he did, he knew what he was doing. He's actually, I don't know how he is with the server stuff.
Oh, Dave, you cut me to the quick.
he's a much better coder than I am and spends a lot more time in Linux than I do, especially nowadays. So, yeah.
I deserve that.
Yeah, you did. You did. That's true. I don't disagree. Who loves you, buddy?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. All right. If you have any thoughts on these questions, feedback, of course, at MacGeekGab.com. Not feedback, of course, at feedback at MacGeekGab.com, of course. That's a better address. I'm not going to go add feedback, of course, at. It's going to bounce. So
is that slash of course? Or?
Jeez. Thanks, Pete. I deserved that. Okay. Let's do some cool stuff found. Randy Walker found one.
Let's do.
That seemed quite popular in our Discord at MacGeekGab.com/Discord, where everybody rocks, by the way. It's an app for your phone called Redact Privacy. And of course, we have a link to it in the show notes. And what it does is it mass deletes all of your social posts, comments, DMs on whatever platform you pointed at. And I think it works with a lot of platforms out there. So if you've decided you're done or, you know, haven't used a platform for a long time and just want to kind of erase your digital history from the platform, doesn't mean it's erased from search engines, obviously. But if you want to erase all your social posts, Redact Privacy will do it. So thank you for that, Randy. Fun stuff. Love it. Love it.
Very, very cool. I have a cool one from Soccer Hallways. I think that's how you probably say it. From, I'm assuming this came through Discord.
Also Discord, yeah. Also
kind of goes into our, you know, gift guide stuff. I would buy this for someone, maybe even myself. He links us to the Retro Games Coding Advent Calendar. And I'm going to try to describe this. We'll have a link in there. But this looks like, I mean, it's an advent calendar where you open the little boxes. And then there's cool stuff inside. But what's great about this one is the cool stuff that's inside is electronics components like LEDs and wires and breadboards and all that sort of stuff. And it comes with a little booklet and you open it up. And each day it gives you things to build a game. You get like 24 games in this thing, I think, by the end of it, obviously, because it's an advent calendar. So you get to build and play every day with a little electronics kit. And what's even cooler is it looks like the whole thing then becomes, remember I talked about those sort of retro electronics kits you would get from like Radio Shack back in the day? Yeah. It kind of, on the back, it's printed, but it kind of looks like that. You put the breadboard inside of it. Yeah, you know, you mess around with things, but you get to build a little game each day as you open up your little thing. And it's like $30.
$30. I know.
On Uncommon Goods. So,
yep.
Looks like a lot of fun. I might order one of these for myself.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
We do advent calendars for our kids every Christmas, and we've continued doing that. And we're really stoked because for the next 2 weeks, my daughter is home with us. So we're getting to kind of hang out, which is nice. But we do advent calendars. If we had not already gotten Lucas a different advent calendar, this would absolutely have been ordered immediately. Because it's the kind of thing that, like us nerds, we love it. So, Porthos John actually sent in quite a few cool stuffs found. The one we're talking about here is the Base US. I believe that's the name, or is it Basus? BASEUS. I call it Basus. Nomos 8-in-1 charging station. This thing's pretty cool. It's got a Qi pad for like your AirPods or whatever. It's got a MagSafe, or I think it's Qi 2, which is magnetic and fully functional. Thing for your phone. So essentially MagSafe for your phone, and you can put it into nightstand mode because it flips up. It's also got 3 AC outlets on it, which is different than a lot of these things. And having AC outlets, like I could see this either at you know, like on your couch where you might wind up wanting to plug stuff in and have plugs there. I could also see potentially even traveling with this thing so that you've got outlets where you need them, and then it's got USB-C ports
and not behind the big credenza
and not behind the big credenza
in your hotel room or behind the headboard of the bed, so you're lighting the whole bed out.
I swear my back problems come directly from having to move credenzas in hotel rooms. It has nothing to do with carrying drums. It's a pretty cool thing. It's $70.
That's awesome.
Right now on Amazon, you know how prices change over there, but cool. Yep. Thing. So thanks for sharing that, Porthos John. Very, very cool. This is it's free. James shares this action button shortcut, which I'll put a link to it, the Reddit post here, but and we've talked about, you know, you can run a shortcut with your action button. And this one, I love the ideas. This. So what happens is when you press the action button with this shortcut, and you can download the shortcut and just use it out of the box for free, the shortcut will run and waits for 1 second. If you do nothing, it toggles silent mode, which is the default action button behavior. However, in that 1 second, if you press the increase volume button, the button right below the action button, it opens the authenticator app for this user. If you press the volume down button, it opens a menu with other apps that you might want to open. And then also, if you do nothing and you're driving, it opens a menu with destinations that he can map to with Google Maps, or of course you could do it with Apple Maps too. But I love this, A, for what it is, but also for the thought process that it triggers. It's like, oh, wait, you do the action button, and then you can do other things that you're telling the shortcut to do. It's like, that's the part where it's like the 1 second pause is huge to me, because now you get different shortcuts going on. So, yeah.
That's perfect, because I started messing around with changing what my action button could do, and I quickly realized I had a hard time getting my phone back to, you know, off of silent. I'm like, I don't want that.
Right.
I want it to, you know, I want it to be silent. That's what I use it for. It's my muscle memory.
Yes.
And seeing this, oh, that's awesome. And for, I'm going to tell on myself, I really feel stupid. I don't know why I thought the power button was the action button. No, it's a little button above your volume up and volume down
sure
button. But, because I changed it and I didn't realize, I'm like, it's not working. I don't know why it's not working. And then a couple of days later, I hit the action button and went to take my phone out of mute.
Yeah.
Because I'm going, I'm not hearing things. Oh, that's the action button.
That's
never mind.
Button. Yep.
So.
We have lots of cool stuff found left, so we'll talk about more of those next week. But there is one that I wanted to share because I know you're traveling, Pete, and you want to share this one from Grumpy Mike?
Yeah, so Grumpy Mike put in Discord, thank you so much. We talked about the Barrel X or Barrel AX, I don't know, MT3000 travel router that repeats the hotel Wi-Fi or the airplane Wi-Fi. And what I didn't mention is that even though it's in beta, it works really well. It supports tail scale and using an exit node. So I know what I was trying to do was, and messing with it, and I still haven't done it, is make my VPN, the router, go to my VPN, to my home. I can get it to work with PIA VPN, no problem. It's kind of built into it. You download some files, and it works great, lasts a long time. Couldn't get it to work with my VPN running off of my Synology router, just because you have to go in and configure it, and
sure.
I didn't have time to mess with it. Well, turns out that Tailscale, I can run my Mac Mini at home as an exit node, and often do, and the BarrelAx router will go, oh, yeah, I can use that. So it uses Tailscale, and my exit node is now home. I appear to be home, even when I'm not.
That's awesome.
Tell that to my wife. Honey, I'm here.
I also want to remind people that there is a Tailscale app for Apple TV, and you can set your Apple TV to be an exit node. I find it to be faster than my Synology at acting like an exit node, because there's some CPU overhead that happens, and evidently it's quite a bit. And, you know, my Apple TV is plugged in all the time and is on Ethernet. I think if your Apple TV was on Wi-Fi, you might want to see like how good that connection is before you start using that as an exit node. And for everyone who is completely confused about what we're talking about in terms of Tailscale exit nodes, what an exit node does is it essentially makes it like a VPN. So you connect to the Tailscale device at your house, and when it's set in this exit node mode and you use it that way, and this is a choice you make in the menu on your Mac or on your iPhone, once you enable that, all your traffic goes through that device at your house, and you appear, like Pete said, to be coming from your home or wherever that exit node might be living.
Except the YouTube TV, which goes, oh, no, you're on a laptop. Let me have your location.
Yeah.
Nope, you can't watch. No.
Yeah, I know.
But that's okay. So, there's a way to do it. I read about it, and I didn't do it yet. And so my project going to be this week is to learn how to access, for instance, my printer at home, because I can't put a Tailscale client on my printer.
I've already done it. You just have to connect to your printer by its IP address on your local network. And then you're good to go. That's what I do. And I come home and things are printed. I did it on the train. I connected
when
my laptop.
You say on my local network, but my local network is
10.68.8.1.
Yeah. And my printer isn't on 10.68.8.1.
Well, it's on 10.68.8 something, though. And you just, that's the IP. You go into system settings, printers, add a printer, manually add by IP address, and put in the IP address of your printer. Assuming it's a network printer. If it's not a network printer,
it,
then
it is.
Yeah.
So here's where I'm confused, Dave. So my home network is not 10. It's 192.168.1.1.
Sure.
My travel network is 192.168.8.1. So it's on the .8 subnet, not the .1 subnet.
Right,
so
but how do tail I scale it? Can be set to, I forget the terminology of it, but tail scale can be set to allow local network access. In fact, that's exactly...
Allow local network access. Allow direct access to the local network when routing traffic via an exit node.
Bingo.
So checking that, I should be able to ping my printer.
Correct.
I've already done it. See?
Yep.
Look how easy that was.
Yep. No, it's great. And it won't see it, like in the Bonjour browser, if you're far from it, it won't see it. You have to manually... I had to manually add it as an IP address, and then it was fine. And now, welcome to what happens when my phone rings and it's Pete. That's the conversation. So there you go.
Yeah, we just had it.
Yep. Thanks for hanging out with us, folks. Adam, do you have anything more to add?
No, I'm all good. I'm ready to get out of here.
Same. Yeah. All right, folks. Happy, if you're in the U.S., have a great week and happy Thanksgiving. Make sure to check out our, actually, if you're not in the U.S., also have a great week. There's no, like, the happy Thanksgiving part was for the folks in the U.S. Have a great week is for all of us. Make sure to go to MacGeekUp.com/giveaway. There's still time to get into the OWC giveaway for their Express 1M2 SSD enclosure here in November. And then we've got some fun stuff coming up for December, of course. Have a great week. Thanks to CashFly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Make sure to check out Adam's new show, the debut film podcast, Pete's show, So There I Was, my shows, Business Brain and Gig Gab. And leave us that review. We'd love that. MacGeekUp.com/review. That's right. 5 new things, 5 stars.
Make it so.
Make it so. Adam, do you have any lasting words for them?
Thank you here. Oh, yeah. Don't get caught.
Made on a Mac.
See ya.
Later, everybody.